Today I'd like to address an issue that affects us all. You know, it doesn't matter if you're old or young. It doesn't matter in the situation if you're tall or short, whether you're religious or non-religious. It doesn't matter where you're from, loud or quiet, whether you realize it or not. That's quite a spectrum. This issue affects every one of us. Scores of movies have been made about it. Put fear in and mocking in certain places. But as we get into the sermon today, we understand directly. Possibly the only difference between people that have lived in the past and yourself is you're going through the time. And you potentially could see this transpire. What are we dealing with? The title of the sermon is this: The Other Side Has a Plan. Simple. The other side has a plan. What is that plan? But so does God concerning you. There are four items I'd like to cover today that reflect the concept of an antichrist. And I would like to address the concept of an antichrist and what type of society and world we live in today that reflects their mind thought, their thoughts, their mindset, their entire viewpoint in life. The definition of an antichrist, if you just look it up, is this: a great personal opponent of Christ who will spread evil throughout the world before being conquered at Christ's second coming. A second thing is a person or a force seen as opposing Christ or the Christian church. And that's a definition straight out of the encyclopedia. I'd like to get into the biblical definition before we start with 4 points. The biblical definition is this: antichrist. The word antichrist can be understood to mean either against Christ or instead of Christ. That's a pretty important term. Instead of Christ. Several times it is used in plural in such a way that it can be applied in almost anyone to anyone who is opposed to Christ. The common use of the name applies to the great antagonist in the last days, the world dictator, or final emperor. But he is not only against Christ, but to the Gentiles at last, he is instead of Christ. And you heard in the prayer, it was a good statement. The prayer actually is a good segue in, if you think about it. The prayer went like this. It said, as we understand your plan of salvation, this is contrary, and these events will take place before we actually hit the Feast of Tabernacles, or it plays out. Think about what's coming. That's what today's sermon's about. I'd like to begin with 2 Thessalonians 2. Second Thessalonians 2 and verse number 8. And then shall the wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume. This is Paul making the statement. With the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all powers and signs and lying wonders, with all deceivableness and unrighteousness in them that perish, or that are perishing, actually, should be the correct term, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. I think about the opposition, and that's really what this is all about. This is an opposition sermon. And just to bring it to the foresight of your mind, forefront of your mind, Matthew 24 tells us, among other places, to watch. And that's what we should be doing. But today I want to do something else. Not just as we're to be looking to see this overwhelming concept, but you think about the word instead. And I want to look at how many different applications this addresses. Instead. Not just claiming to be Christ, but placing himself in that position. So point number one, the spirit of Antichrist will be prevalent in the last days. What is the spirit of Antichrist? That's a lot to be said about that. Let's begin in 1 Timothy 4. We pick up something stated here. 1 Timothy 4 and verse number 1. And now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, And it says forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from meats, which God has created to receive for Thanksgiving. You think about the entire concept or the spirit of Antichrist. They're going to go against God's laws, and they're going to preach them as something that you should be adhering to. Do you see that today? How many different facets in our life do we see that we see directly it's evil, and then you go in a point, you call it evil, and you're the one that's directed as the person with the issue? Anti-biblical concepts that are passed off as religious truth. How many lies? You know, I don't know about you, but I hit the point where there's vegans and vegetarians almost everywhere I go. Doesn't matter who it is. And they make me feel bad for eating meat. Well, maybe not me. I understand directly the Bible tells us not to offend the brother that doesn't eat meat. But does the Bible tell us we're not to partake of meat? Quite the contrary. I'm just using that as an example. You think about the spirit of Antichrist is against biblical law, is against what Christ taught. The point. How many laws tell us what the Bible condemns? And yet we have to just be part of tolerance, if I say that. Let's go to 1 John 4. First John 4 and verse number 2. And every spirit that confesses not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of Antichrist. Whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already it is in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is it that in you than it is in the world. And they that are of the world speak they of the world. And they hear, and the world hears them. But we of God, he that knows God hears us. He that is not of God hears not us. Hereby we, the spirit of truth, the difference between the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Ask the question. How many religions pass themselves off as following biblical doctrine and following Christ today? Is that Antichrist? Now, I'm just arbitrarily picking a couple, but I want you to follow with me here. I want to begin with Mormonism, Mormons, as we ask the question, is this anti-Christian, Antichrist? Mormons, what is taught today is that what Smith and his predecessors gave, that we would become gods, that Lucifer and Christ were spirit brothers. Mormonism teaches that everyone on earth pre-existed as spirits by heavenly parents. Now, the plan of the parent gods in Mormonism goes like this. Life for you did not begin here on earth. You lived before you were born, and you will live on the spirit world after your mortal life is ended. We all once lived in the presence of God, the eternal Father. In the world before you were a spirit child of his, with the divine parentage, or your destiny through righteous living is to become like your Father in heaven and return to his presence. Now you might sit there and say, where do you get this? I got this directly out of the Book of Mormon. Mormons even believe that Jesus Christ and Lucifer and all that were spiritual children of God in the pre-mortal world, Mormon Doctrine 278, page 278, that Jesus was the first spirit child. But Christ and Lucifer in Mormonism were brothers, as well as you. Now, I asked the question. I've had people make the statement to me before. They give such a great example of what family should be like. These individuals. Is this Antichrist? Instead of. Not just replacing him. I'm going to cover several different religions in this first point. And you need to ask yourself the question. How, as we read Luke, tells you directly how little faith will be taught in the world in the last days. How few people will be holding fast to the truth. Think about this. The apostle McConkie wrote, "The first spirit to be born in heaven was Jesus." Mormon Doctrine, page 129. This agrees with Joseph F. Smith, sixth prophet of the LDS Church. Among the spirit children of Elohim, the firstborn was and is Jehovah, or just Christ, Jesus Christ, to whom all others are juniors. Gospel, page 70. So he is God's first spirit child in heaven, and then we are the spirit children born afterwards. So according to Mormons' teaching, God the Father is the dad in the situation of you and everybody else in your family. Whether you realize it or not, if somebody is a Mormon and they die and you're related, you're saved as well. Is this Antichrist? And you think about this. As we go through Hinduism, Islam, Muslim, as you go through all these different beliefs, billions of people in the world falter or fall into. You think about the objectivity or the job you have in the world tomorrow to reteach every one of these individuals that are going to make it to the world tomorrow, or are going to make it to the millennium period. It's a big task. What does the Bible tell us? 1 Corinthians 15. With the concept that we were spirit beings, and then we obviously became flesh. What does the Bible tell us? Obviously, we read this directly. 1 Corinthians 15, verse number 46. "Howbeit, that one was not first which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterwards that which is spiritual." That kind of conflicts with this teaching. It says, "The first man is of the earth," 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 47. "The first man is of the earth, earthy, but the second man is of the Lord from heaven." Does that correspond with this doctrine that we just read? No. It's what we understand. Genesis 2. Get a little deeper than that, just straightforward right from Genesis 2, and you know the verse, number 7. "And the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils, the breath of life." Not something that was reincarnated. He is nephesh. He became a living being, living soul. He became a living being. Your opportunity isn't eternal as it's stated. Your opportunity is only eternal if you follow God's laws and principles. There's your adjustment difference. Spirit wasn't first. You didn't become in that fashion. It's an anti-Christian doctrine? I'd say yes, it is. It doesn't tell you who Christ really was. How about Jehovah's Witnesses? Now, I pick on all these individuals and groups. It's interesting. When God says to watch, it's interesting how we, and I use this term, how we see with our eyes, or other people see these religions go door to door, walk in and talk, dress correctly, looking the part, having the family in one line, and look at the doctrine that they study and what they teach. There's a lot to hold fast to with God's laws. Do we study and do we follow God's example, Christ's example, what he said? Do these people believe Christ is who he was? Jehovah's Witness. JWs believe that Jesus Christ was a perfect man, and that he is a perfectly distinct person, distinct from the Father, God the Father. However, they also teach that before his earthly life, Jesus was a spirit creature, Michael the Archangel, who was created by God and became the Messiah at his baptism. Was Christ a created being? Yeah, there's so many things you look at here and you break it down and you got to actually do the analysis and say, is this Antichrist? Is this prevalent? You think about the attitude and the orientation. According to Jehovah's Witnesses, Jesus is the mighty one, although not almighty, as Jehovah God is. According to John 1 in their Bible, the New World Translation, Christ is a God, but not the God. What exactly does John 1 tell us? Let's turn to John 1. You know, we've pushed this issue before. When you actually address who the God of the Old Testament was, how many people falter and don't believe it, or they don't understand it? John 1 and verse number 1. In a beginning was the Word, Logos, Christ. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Simple, direct, and to the point. This isn't arbitrary. Bible pretty much breaks it down distinctively. Verse number 10. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. Verse number 14. And the Word was made flesh, and he dwelt among us, and behold his glory, and the glory as of only the begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Different in verbiage from what we see in Jehovah Witnesses' Bible. So you ask the question as you go point to point. You know, you read 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 4. They were baptized through what? And by who? That rock that was Christ. People don't identify with it. You can go through Hebrews. How many different verses can we address that show that Christ was the God of the Old Testament? You read verse number Genesis 1:26. What does it tell you? Create man in our image, not a created being. Is this a spirit of Antichrist? Does it pass the Lippmann's test? A lot of questions. Catholics. I'm just going to address this simple. I mean, I'm not going through every religion. I'm just touching the highlights of what affects America as we're dubbed a Christian nation. Catholic teaching. The Pope takes the place of Jesus Christ on earth. By divine right, the Pope has supreme and full power and faith and morals over each and every pastor and his flock. So is he the head of the church? Is that all it's saying? If it stopped there, you'd probably sit there and go, huh. What does it say? It says, he is the infallible ruler, the founder of dogmas, the author and the judge of councils, and the universal ruler of truth. He's the arbiter of the world. He's the supreme judge of heaven and of earth. And he's the judge of all, being judged by no man or no one. God himself on earth. That's quoted directly from New York Catechism, dogma. Is that Antichrist? Now, I only ask this question because you need to take a look at this. These individuals, and I mean, what I found appalling, I'm just making a statement. In New York, if you know it, this law was passed recently where now the same-sex marriage can take place. The only group that stood up opposing them was the Catholics. Well, good for them. That's correct. But you take a look at the package, do they pass the Lippmann's test? You think about the responsibility you're going to have. Think about the responsibility you have holding on to what God gives you. A lot to say. 1 Peter 5, what does the Bible say about that comment? You take a look at these individually, break them down. 1 Peter 5, verse number 2. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly. Not for filthy lucre, but of ready mind. It says, neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fades not away. Not that you're God on earth. We all have responsibilities. Simply stated. You got to ask the question, do Catholics actually serve Christ? You know, you go into 1 John 5, verse number 1. They give a pretty good orientation. But you go to 1 John 5, verse 1, it says, whosoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone that loves him, that begots, loves him also, that is begotten of him. And we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. So you ask the question directly, can we take this group of individuals? You know, you can espouse anything you want. But when you've removed the Ten Commandments in the Catholic Bible, you've removed the Second Commandment. You shift the Tenth Commandment to two. Is this Antichrist? You know, way too often we see these things, and we see these things with our eyes. And as we watch the vision with our eyes, we see these individuals espousing and saying things that you say, that's right. Well, good for them. You can be right in some things. God's asking us to be right, period. That's the mantle. That's the objective we are to keep. And again, as I said, you just do it in your own head. How about Muslims? How about Hindus? How about Buddhists? How about Judaism? You want to attack that directly? They don't even believe he's come. Or they're claiming a different individual. How about Christian Scientists? How about Scientologists? How about Unitarians? They all show themselves to be religious. You know, I find it interesting that you see this trend now in Hollywood where, well, yeah, they believe in the Kabbalah. You know what the Kabbalah is? You know, I mean, read the Gnostic Connection. I mean, this is absolutely one of those situations where you walk through this point by point. We live in a time that was prophesied about by servants of God years ago. You're seeing it firsthand. But you look at what we call religious today, how far off base that group is. There's a lot to say. A lot of attitude. 2 Timothy 3. 2 Timothy 3 and verse number 1. Know this also, that in the last days, perilous times, meaning times of stress, shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own self, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers. False accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. Traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God. Is that what we're seeing in society today? How about our government? Founded with Freemasons. How about agnostics? How about you can stand and you can get elected as an atheist and brag about it? You think about the fundamentals that we were founded on. First John 2. It's interesting when you, if somebody that was a true believer stood up in front of the rest of the nation today or in front of the world and actually espoused God's laws, how's it going to go over? How's it going to be when the two witnesses show up? You think about 3.5 years, they can't touch them. And they're gonna call these individuals out for what they are. That's something I want to see. You think about this world and this power that's being set up. 1 John 2, verse number 22. Who is a liar but he that denies that Jesus is the Christ? He is an antichrist. He denies the Father and the Son. Whosoever denies the Son and the same hath not the Father, but he that acknowledges that the Son hath the Father also. Let that therefore abide in you, which you have heard from the beginning, that if that which ye had heard from the beginning shall remain in you, ye shall also continue in the Son and in the Father. As you continue, you think about the Spirit, denying Christ, who he is. When you get into Hinduism and Muslim and some of these other concepts, they say, well, we should have tolerance, we should accept everybody. That's not what God will do. When Christ returns, it'll be with an iron hand. We understand how it'll be, and in this situation, it's going to be direct. That's why so many individuals will be upset. Think about the attitude. The word denies in verse number 23 means to refuse what was offered, to place their own interest ahead of what Christ gave us, as an example. This point is simple. The spirit of Antichrist is prevalent in these last days. Even in religious circles, in governmental circles. You talk about liberal media, you talk about all these different facets. It reigns. There's a thread. Do we see it? Think about how Job was vexed, or Job, how Lot was vexed. Job was probably too. friend. But you think about the orientation attitude that Lot went through. It's going to get bad. Point number two. The Antichrist will have power, a one-world government. And we read that. Let's go into Revelation 17. Revelation 17 and verse number 8. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and shall go into perdition. And they shall dwell on the earth and shall wonder, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. When the behold, the beast that was, and is not, and yet is. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads and seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and the others is yet to come. And when he comes, he may continue for a short space. And the beast that was and is not, and he is the eighth, and is the seventh, and he goes into perdition. And the ten horns that thou sawest are ten kings, and thou receive no kingdom as of yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. And these have one mind, and they shall give their power and strength unto the beast. So there's going to be a physical power, a physical reign. You think about what the Bible instructs us and how it tells us. You know, it says living in Babylon, however you want to put it. Who and where are these individuals and when will it come to pass? It's coming. That's the premise. You think about where your edification needs to be, what you need to get in a row. And you hear all this statement, get out of debt, get away from this, get off this type of dole. You know, you think about how many ways, just stop yourself somewhere in the day and think about how many ways you're relying on something within this system to actually function. How does that affect you? And how can they affect you? Something we need to answer. The Antichrist is going to have power. A lot of speculation on who this is and where we derive this power. But you got to think about it. You think it's not already set up. This is a time period. This is a setup. And this is a government, an underlining power that we understand where it's going to come from. That Satan, the devil, obviously is doing his own, let's just say, organization. Daniel 2. Daniel 2. In verse number 28. Daniel saw a lot of what John saw in his vision and revelation. We pick up some similar verses. Daniel 2, verse 28, it says this. But there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. You think about the time period that's actually announced here. And I just want to touch some highlights. You can read the whole thing later to yourself. Verse number 28 specifies the latter days. Verse number 34, it says, and thou sawest till there was a stone that was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon the feet that was like iron and clay, and he brake them in pieces. And then was the iron and clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken into pieces together, and they became like chaff of the summer, threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and was filled the whole earth. This is the dream as it continues down point by point. Speaking of latter times, speaking of times to come. Verse number 45, it says, I have turned the page, says, for as much as thou sawest the stone that was cut out of the mountain without the hands, that it brake the iron pieces, the iron and brass and clay and silver and gold, it was a great God, hath made known to the king that thou shalt what shall come to pass hereafter. That the dream is certain, that the interpretation thereof is sure. What you're seeing as you read Daniel 2, as you read Daniel 7, 9, several other verses, what you see are several other chapters. What you see is a breakdown. It tells about kingdoms that have either passed, speculated that they're past, but it also tells about what's coming. You read these verses direct, and it tells you what's coming and what's going to put them to an end. There is a great power. Successive world empires are mentioned during this verse. As you go during this chapter, as you go to verse number 39, it makes a statement here. It says, "And after these shall arise another kingdom inferior to these, and anoint it, and another kingdom made of brass, which shall bear rule over the earth." And then it says, "And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks into pieces and subdued all things, and as iron it breaks all these, and shall it break in pieces and bruise." And then verse number 41, "And whereas you saw the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay, it shall be part of the kingdom, shall be divided." And as I said, these are all speculated, what they were, what they've come to be. In verse number 39, the inferior Persia, the brass empire thought to have been Macedonia. In verses number 33 and 40, to have been Rome. So you take a look at these verses, and as you do the breakdown of what took place during these parts in prophecy, and you ask yourself the question, what was seen in the situation in a dream by Nebuchadnezzar, what John saw, and how you can interpret it. He didn't make it simple. Most individuals here that study this, they're looking at it, and as they do the study, they're speculating as well, aren't they? But the certain verses aren't necessary to speculate. When you get into a breakdown straightforward, it says in the latter times, these will come to play. We understand the times we live in. Mankind wasn't given 20,000 years or 30,000 years or 14 million years on earth, as you hear evolutionists boast. We're not ignorant. And some of these concepts we can determine on, we can look at. And as you read this, and as you go through these point by point, and you look at these kingdoms point by point, we need to come to the realization of what is coming. And that comes with the next 2 points. Let's go to Daniel 7. I want to touch on just a couple more things that Daniel brings up. Daniel 7, verse number 20. "And the 10 horns that were in his head, and of that which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes, and had a mouth, and spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints, and prevailed against them." We see this in Revelation. We'll look in a bit. Daniel 7, verse number 7. Daniel 7, and verse number 7. "And after this I saw night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful in terror, strong exceedingly. It had great iron teeth, and devoured and brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns." Verse number 8. "I considered the horns, and I beheld, there came up among them another little horn, and before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in the horn were the eyes like eyes of man, and of a mouth speaking great things." Verse number 24, Daniel 7 and verse 24. "And the 10 horns out of the kingdom, and the 10 kings that shall arise," or 10 kings that shall arise, "and another shall rise after them. And he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings." So we look at these things and point by point. We understand 10 kingdoms are going to rise. We understand these things are going to take place when. You take a look at what John, or what Daniel's vision is, and what the parity is compared to what we're going to read in Revelation in a bit. And you think about this power. These are actual kingdoms. These are rulers in the society in the last days. They're going to come to power, and this thing is going to grow in power to where the only thing that's going to be able to put it down is Christ's return. And you may see it. We're living in the latter days. That's the premise. 10 governments, which is going to serve the beast, this Antichrist, not just the spirit, but the entire program. Think about where they're going to draw their authority. Let's turn to Revelation 18. And you think about our children, you think about our grandchildren, certainly going to be part of it. Think about the fear in our situation and what we're going to see. How intimidated are we, or should we be? Well, we'll see that in a bit as well. Revelation 18, verse number 2. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and become the habitation of demons. And behold, every foul spirit, a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. And all nations have drunk the wine of wrath of her fornication. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through her abundance of her delicacies. This is a power. This is a one-world government. This is a power that's actually moving during what period of time? These latter days, as we look at it. Verse number 9. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her. And when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing far off in the fear and torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city for whom 1 hour thy judgment come. Verse number 15. And the merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, shall stand off afar with the fear and the torment, weeping and wailing. And verse number 23. And the light of the candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom, and the bride shall be heard no more, and all in thee, and the merchants with the great men of the earth, for the sorceries where all nations were deceived. All nations will be involved. All nations will be partaking of this involvement. And it's not just going to be a political power, but it's going to be those individuals that are wealthy. It's going to be a great power of men with a vision receiving power and direction from one being. You think about that. You think about the world that we live in today as we walk into. As we've heard, I've talked to a couple days, the last couple people. I mean, we got 12 weeks of the feast, what it represents. You live in a time period right now, as you go through this time period, usually oblivious, because most of us don't think about this stuff, or how stressed would we be if we truly thought about how this world is directed and how far off base it is from God's laws. This is a power, and these are authorities that are drawing power from one being. And that being has set up his government. And his government right now is partaking of the delicacies of your hard work. And he doesn't like you. He's opposed to you. You are in his way, whether you realize it or not. That's the premise. Matthew 24. A lot of verses to cover. When you start talking about prophecy, you start talking about these type of things, yeah, there's a lot related to it. And as I said earlier, you're guessing, a lot of people are guessing on some situation. But there's some things we can see. He tells us to watch, not because you won't be able to vision it. He tells you to watch because these are the things you should be looking for. Matthew 24. In verse number 6, we hear this all the time, but you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you not be troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. A nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, pestilence, and earthquakes in diverse places. And all these things are the beginning of sorrows. You think about this kingdom. You think that, I remember talking to a Catholic, a girl one time, I've said it before, this is not God's world. We read it in the, or we sang it just now in one of the songs where it says, think about a time where the diseases will be gone. Think about a time where these things will be healed unless you're not doing what you should be before God. But his word will be prevalent. His mercy will endure or be what we live with. Absolutely a perfect society. How far away are we from that today? Verse number 15. When you therefore shall be an abomination of desolation spoken of in Daniel, the prophet standing in the holy place. Whosoever readeth, let him understand. Then shall them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Verse number 22. And except these days should be shortened. That's quite a statement. There should be no flesh saved. Are saved alive, what it should mean. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Think about how God loves you. We'll get to that in a bit too. Then verse number 29, immediately after the tribulation in those days, shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. Condition. When Christ returns, things are going to come to place before he returns. Revelation 16. Revelation 16. And verse number 13. And I saw three unclean spirits, like frogs, come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. Three entities we're going to get into in a short second. And they were the spirits of the devil, working out miracles, and to go forth unto kings and the earth, the whole world, to gather them to a battle, that great day of the Almighty. Behold, I will come as a thief. And it continues on, Almighty. Verse number 16, it says this, and he gathered them together in a place called, in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. These powers will be so arrogant. Not only do they have all the money in the world, not only do they have all the governments working with them and all the people in place, all this chess move in place, they're going to be so arrogant that they're going to actually assemble, thinking that they can defeat Christ when they return. You think about authority, and you think about the arrogance of individuals and what you see. You think about false religions, and you think about how many different, let's just say, how many different issues, how many different conditions are going to be prevalent when Christ returns that are antichrist, that are against his laws. Yet people today, they look at him and they say, you need to have tolerance. You need to just have understanding. I had somebody I heard make a statement. I can't believe anybody would have worshipped the God of the Old Testament. How unmerciful, the word I believe they use, but how unmerciful he was. They don't understand unmerciful. Everybody's going to have their time and chance. That's merciful. Not under Satan. A little different program. Point number three, there's going to be a false prophet who will direct men to worship the beast or the Antichrist. Think about what's coming. This individual, Matthew 24, when you think about an Antichrist, most people go right directly, as we read the definitions, they go right directly to the Antichrist himself. He's going to be wounded. He's going to go through certain things. He's going to come back from what should have been a death experience. How many conditions lead up to it? This is one. Matthew 24, verse number 23. It says, then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and they shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive even the very elect. Behold, I have told you before, wherefore. If they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, don't go. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. And it continues. Christ tells us many will come. Is that Antichrist? They're going to make themselves, place themselves in place of him, instead of him. That's the things we should see simply. Revelation 13. Simple sight. We'd hope we will be able to identify it easily. Revelation 13 and verse number 1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw the beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And upon his horns, 10 crowns. And upon his head, the name of blasphemy. Verse number 15. And he had the power to give life into the image. And this is talking about this false prophet. But he had the power to give life to the image of the beast, and the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many would not worship the beast, that the beast should be killed. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive the mark on their right hand, on their forehead. No man might buy or sell, unless they had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. This is a being that's going to come on the scene, and it's going to point and direct all authority to this beast power, this Antichrist. False prophet coming? Bible tells us pretty directly it is. He rises out of the earth, the list goes on. This religious beast, notice how many different names, how many different concepts, a false prophet. Verse number 11. And I beheld another beast coming out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon, and he exercised all power as the first beast before him. And he caused the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he does great wonders, so that he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives them that dwells on the earth by means of miracles, which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, and that which had the wound by a sword and did live. This religious false prophet, religious beast, is what type of an individual? We see it clearly. He comes out of the earth. He has 2 horns like a lamb, giving the appearance of gentleness and giving the appearance in this situation harmless as he impersonates. He's going to have 2 different spectrums. People are going to look to him for religious leadership. He's going to do miracles, and they're going to see it, and they're going to be in awe. Is that going to be easy? You know, you read with me the first point. There's a reason why we went through the first point. How far away people are from God's truth already, and they call themselves religious. You know, God's counting on you. There's a lot of weight on your shoulders, whether you realize it or not. And you think about how people fall away from the truth, and we use that word. It's kind of amazing to me when you see somebody in the church all of a sudden observing things that are contrary to what we already know. What would cause you to do that? Deuteronomy 13. You know, it's amazing to me that so many, if we stood here with 50,000 people, I'm just using an example, and we had divisions and schisms in between us, right? I'd sit there and say, you know what, we're human beings, we need to fix what we need to fix. Everybody in God's church, everybody around the world trying to hold fast to God's principles, are on your team. Don't you find it amazing that we bicker among ourselves sometimes and we have little arguments? Seems like a pretty easy program. What would cause that? You know, our direction should be in what way? We understand it. Difference between you and everybody else I'm talking about, as I'm picking on Muslims and Arabs, etc. Difference is that is you know the truth. Not only do you know the truth and you were called and given the truth, but you see the big picture. You can read about the Antichrist and the false prophet all you want. You know the result. What's going to happen when I read Revelation 19 and Revelation 20? Where do they end up? You know the answer. They can have their time, their 15 minutes of fame, because that's all they're getting. Not you. It's eternal life if you qualify. The other side has an agenda. They do, don't they? You can see it. But you've been given more promises. That's something to keep the focus on, obviously, as we go through these periods of time. What does it tell us in Deuteronomy 13? It says this: if there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives a sign and wonder, the sign and wonders come to pass, wherefore, whereof he spake unto thee, saying, let these things go, let us go after other gods, which thou hast not known, and let us serve them. Thou shalt not hearken unto the words of that prophet, or the dreamer of dreams, for the Lord our God proves you. You think about how contrast that's going to be to what we read about in these last days. They're going to see these lies and miracles. They're going to jump all over them. This individual is going to have the power to do that. Matthew 7. Matthew 7 and verse number 15. Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. For ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? As it continues, what's the difference? We should be able to tell. False prophet will have the power to do great miracles. The people will be looking to him as a religious leader. And they're not looking for the truth. 1 John 2, as I want to get to this final point or premise individual. 1 John 2 and verse number 18. As I said, little children, it is the last time you have heard the Antichrist shall come. Even now, there are many Antichrists. You know, there will be an individual who will not only deny Christ, but will be esteeming the world away from biblical principles. You think about that. And they're going to look at him as somebody. What type of individual? This point in summary, this individual will be fluent in speaking and will direct this world to the beast power. Which brings us to the fourth point. The Bible tells us there's going to be an Antichrist, a man. I don't know how many of you guys ever saw The Omen. I will be the first one to tell you, I've seen Omen 1, 2, and 3. Now, 1 and 2, you sit there and said, okay. When 3 was so far off base that I didn't understand where it came from. A lot of the literature I read concerning this sermon, when I came across the literature, I found that it came from Catholic doctrine, where Christ will be reborn, and through reborn, the fact that he'll be reborn, and then he had to do like a Herod thing and make sure that they killed Christ. If you ever saw The Omen 3, don't watch it. It's a waste of time. But with that said, how far off base what people are looking for? Quite a ways. Let's turn to Daniel 11. I want to get this last individual in understanding these are the times we live in. Daniel 11, verse number 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. He shall speak marvelous things. He's going to speak against God. Talk about blasphemy. Let's turn to 2 John, verse number 7. 2 John, verse number 7. For many deceivers shall be entered into the world, who shall confess not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. This is the deceiver and antichrist. The individual will be seen as great to the rest of the world. This man's going to mock God. This man, the situation, is going to be seen by all heaven. In what way? He's going to preach against Christ, against his coming. He's going to have people ready for when Christ returns to fight against him. You think about what type of charismatic individual is going to be able to do that. This plan. 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 4, then we'll run Revelation 13 real quick. 2 Thessalonians 2. And verse number 4. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God and that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself, as Paul states straightforward, that he is God. That's what this individual is. Where does he derive his power? Let's go back to Revelation 13. Pick up the first part. Let's begin in verse number 2. Revelation 13, verse 2. And the beast which I saw was like unto the leopard, and its feet were the feet of the bear, and its mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power. So he draws his power directly from Satan the devil, and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of the heads as if it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after this beast. And they worshipped the dragon, and they gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who's able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And the power was given unto him to continue 3.5 years. And he opened his mouth, blasphemy came against God, and blasphemed his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwelt in heaven. It was also given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Similar to what you read in Daniel. It continues. We can keep going. How does he draw his power? Well, we see it directly from Satan himself. Daniel 11 tells us that he's not going to have a desire for women. Revelation 13, as we've already read, tells you about the mark of the beast. It's going to tell you directly that to buy and sell, it's going to require you to worship this beast or this world. We all know his number, as we see the number 666. The way to identify the beast is by counting. In ancient times, letters in the alphabet served as numbers. The first 9 letters stood for the numbers 1 through 9. The next 9 for the numbers 10 through 90, and so on. And we understand that breaks down. A lot of people have found certain individuals and said, see, it's got to be this individual. You'll see it when it transpires. Has he come on the scene yet? I couldn't tell you. I don't recognize it. Has a power and formation come into scene yet? Oh yeah, we're in the part of troubles. We're seeing things take place at a fast escalated rate, aren't we? And we're seeing ourselves as a chosen few. We're seeing ourselves in what type of a place? You can't speak against what's going on. You don't have the authority and power. If you bring it up, I mean, there's hate crimes now that if you brought up certain topics that they see as against their own agenda, you could be brought up in charges. How antichrist are we? This being's coming. There's no doubt about it. Pretty simple. Straightforward. But I want to go to this point. Let's go to Revelation 19. This is what we need to focus on, and all this said comes down to this. As we see, the worst time is yet to come. This dictator, these individuals come, it's going to be as this world has never seen. But this is what's being promised. Revelation 19 and verse number 20. Well, actually, let's go to Revelation 19, verse number 19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against the army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, and with which he deceived them, and had the mark of the beast, and to them that worshipped his image. And they were both cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. Revelation 20. In verse number 10, and the devil that deceived him was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet were cast, is the correct enunciation. They shall be tormented, and that there's period to the point in the story. And what takes place with you? Where's your hope in all this? With all this taking place, with all this coming to be. I want to turn to Matthew 24. It's a couple of verses I want to cover, and then we'll bring this to a close. Matthew 24 and verse number 19. Matthew 24, as we understand, is a schematic. And as you look at this schematic and you compare it with Revelation, it gives a pretty good analysis of what's going to take place. It gives you a timeline. But right here, what does it tell you? Matthew 24 and verse number 19. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. And pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as what was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever will be. And I want to cover Revelation 12. Revelation 12 and verse number 13 tells you this. It says, and when that dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth man-child. And to the woman were given two wings and a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness and to her place, that she be nourished for a time and times and a half a time from the face of the serpent. You talk about a place of safety. You get it from these verses, what we just read. You ask yourself the question. This is what it comes down to. You were told to watch. You know, will we? You'll hold fast. That's the premise. This is a schematic given. These verses were a schematic given for what? To show you. To tell you what's coming. It shouldn't take you by surprise. But how much more earnestly should we be preparing, understanding that they also have an agenda? That's the principle. You've been given a promise. You understand what's going to take place for you. You take a look and a definition of an antichrist. And people want to see it as one individual, this fourth point. It's a man that's coming. No, it's anything that's placed instead of. That's quite a statement. You think about it as you go through your daily lives in prayer. Anything placed ahead of Christ, anything placed ahead of God and his plan. We look at the plan of salvation as we start working towards this Feast of Tabernacles. We understand that everything I just covered will be completed and done by then. It'll be ended. We start a totally different concept and program. You understand the big picture. Keep yourself focused on the big picture and understand what you're going to be going through. You weren't promised anything easy. The other side has an agenda.